Hello, my name is Ray Jefferson, and you're listening to Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU-FM. Conversations is a partnership between KWBU and Creative Waco, where we discuss arts and culture and the ways that they're taking shape in our city. I serve as the Director of Marketing and Communications at Creative Waco. We're the city's local arts agency, which means that we provide resources and strategy to grow and support the arts in Waco. Later in this episode, you'll hear a segment called David and Art with David Smith. So today's show will run a little differently than it usually does. Normally, Creative Waco Executive Director Fiona Bond would provide an update of our organization or different programs that we have going on. But after chatting with her in preparation for this episode earlier this week, I really felt like it would be good for her to be part of the full conversation that I'm having with our conversations guest today. So on today's show, we're talking with Carl Hoover, who is the entertainment editor at the Waco Tribune Herald. I know traditionally our guests are people who are in charge of arts programming or really directly work in the arts in Waco, but I feel like Carl is a really great guest to have because he's been working as the entertainment editor at the Trib for 34 years and has essentially served as a historian for the development of Waco's creative identity, which is really important, I think. So he has a reputation with local arts leaders and artists for being a thorough storyteller and managing to know just about everything that's going on in Waco in the arts world, which is a pretty tall order these days. Fiona and Carl, thank you guys for being here today.
Hey, thanks for inviting us.
Yeah. So I wanted to talk to both of you at the same time because I really feel like you're two people who are in a position to be able to take a step back and look at where our creative community is right now and to talk about how it's developed so far and where it might be headed. So to start off, Carl, I want to talk a little bit about your background. Did you always set out to be an entertainment editor?
No. And in fact, when I started college at the University of Texas, I started as a physics major.
Really?
And got about a year or so into it. I was making good grades, but had no idea what I was doing.
Sure.
And thought, do I want to continue in this 10 years or so to get to the point where I would do the work that I wanted to do, and decided not. And took a journalism class after that because I was interested in English. I was interested in history, interested in political science. Journalism sort of mixed all that together, and that got me into journalism and such. I got into arts and entertainment because I wanted to get into – I liked movies a lot. I had been covering education at the Trib for about a year and a half, and the arts and entertainment position opened up. Barb Darden had been in that before me. So I applied thinking, you know, I'll get to review movies and
sure.
That would be fun. And, you know, I always thought about writing, you know, movie script and such like that. That sort of gets me in that door. And the paper said, okay, we'll let you try it. And I've been there now for over 30-something years covering arts and entertainment.
So I guess
and
really
I have no specialized training. I'm a generalist.
Sure.
I have found that, well, a lot of the skills you need as a journalist carry over. And able to communicate, able to describe, observe, listen. Listen is a key component. And so those are sort of the skills I've brought to it and have learned from the people I've talked to over the years.
Sure. That's awesome. So did you work at the Trib right out of school?
Right out of school, I went to Brazil and lived in Brazil. I did about a year's work with Southern Baptist there, project with college students in evangelism, so learned to speak Portuguese. Came back, worked for a small newspaper outside of the Atlanta area for about a year and a half. Came back to Texas to do some work at seminary, and then decided just to get back into straight newspaper work and such. And so worked about a year and a half, small paper in Fort Worth area. Came directly from that to Waco, 84, so...
You kind of mentioned, you talked about, you know, some of the skills that you have applied in journalism. What do you find especially compelling about journalism, you know, as a creative form or as, you know, a way of expressing yourself?
I love to read, and journalism was one of those ways of learning about the world and such. So a large part of it is storytelling. A large part of it, too, is we live in a complex world where there aren't any there are few yes-no questions that answer, but lots of questions that have different dimensions. And good journalism shows a lot of those different dimensions
sure.
and such. Mm-hmm. Arts and entertainment, for me, tells a lot about culture in those ways. We learn a lot about each other by the sort of art that we create and such.
Definitely.
It's really fascinating hearing that background to you, Carl, because that makes sense of a lot of, I feel like your journalism style is a very kind of 360 degree look at the arts. And hearing that you come from a science background, that you possibly have a movie script in you somewhere. And I'm clocking that, by the way.
Yep.
It's but down to a music video now, 3 minutes, you know.
Well, we know people who can make that happen, so.
But that's exactly right. The storytelling is something that you bring to the stories that you tell about the cultural things that you talk about and write about.
One of the reasons why I've been here so long, outside of that I met my wife in Waco, our three kids were born in Waco, raised in Waco. But one of the reasons I've been at the newspaper for so long, it's the size where I've been able to be a generalist. So I can cover visual arts. I can cover movies, although not as much as I used to. I can cover theater. I can cover lots of different things. Mm-hmm. A larger newspaper, you get specialized. Smaller newspaper, you wouldn't be doing it at all. And so it has been a very comfortable, enjoyable niche for me. I've been able to do lots of different things.
Sure. I'm finding as I'm talking to people that Waco is a city where that's possible in a lot of different areas. Because, you know, I know for the work that I do, I it's kind of the same thing where I have flexibility and the ability to, you know, it's small enough to where you can really focus in on some things, but still like large enough to where you can branch out and try new things if you want to. And there's support for that. So I think it's really cool that seeing that across the board. Do you feel like there's an element of art to journalism?
Yes. Part of it is in style, the style of writing, the type of vocabulary you use. There's also a style in organizing. How do you tell your story? Because you have the raw material of an interview and of facts and such like that, but it's up to you to put it together. And it's up to you to put it together with your reader in mind. And that's one of the things I hope has shaped my writing is I've always had a good sense or tried to have a good sense of who I'm writing to. And with the newspaper, it's more of a mass audience. You're writing for families, you're writing for singles, you're writing for old people, young people, kids, and that sort of thing. So when you think about those things in mind, that sort of shapes how you put your story together. So there's sort of an art to that. There's an art in what information you use that's pertinent to the reader, pertinent to the subject, pertinent to the people that you're talking about and such. I used to do a lot more writing, and particularly when I was doing more movie reviewing. I like to write satire. I very rarely write satire now because the audience for that has changed.
Sure.
You write something satirical and you find pieces of that lifted out and put online totally out of context.
Yeah.
And so you almost have to, if you do a satirical piece, you almost have to say, this is satire.
Yeah.
You know, quotes yeah. on it or capital letters. Mm-hmm. I had a piece, which was probably the one piece that got me closest to getting fired. And it was a piece that came out on the 4th of July, which was part of the issue. But we had a big vampire movie opening that weekend. And I was just thinking, vampire movie on 4th of July weekend, what's the connection? I thought, well, what if the founding fathers were secretly vampires? You know? So I went there, comical piece and such. And it just hit the fan.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People are like, how dare you insult the father of our country? It's like, how can you insult somebody by you know, vampires don't exist. But anyway, yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you get pushback on things like that from people who don't read and understand where you're coming from, it makes you a little leery. So writing with humor, that's part of the artistry of it. There's also an art in criticism, particularly here locally, mm-hmm. because so much of our theater is amateur or it's college level. So these people don't have the years of experience and polish and such.
Sure.
So when you're being critical, you have to keep that in mind.
Yeah.
And there's an art to being critical with a way of it can be improved, mm-hmm. but not personal.
Sure.
And so that sometimes is walking a very thin line, but there's sort of an art to that.
Yeah.
And also, I've never read anything of yours that's been cruel. I think a lot of art critics are known as being, you know, really vicious in their criticisms. But I think, like you say, there's a very fine line. When you're working in a local community and part of your goal living and raising your family in the communities to build up the community, that's a very fine line to tread.
Definitely. Yeah. So what are some things that you think that written news can do that radio, television, video, those other formats can't do as well?
One is the level of detail.
Sure.
You can do context and background much better in a written piece. There are things where you can play with different styles. So say you wrote a piece on poetry, you can play with language in that piece that sort of reflects on whatever you're commenting about. You don't have the emotion that comes through in radio, the emotion of a voice. Mm-hmm. You don't have the facial communication you do in television. So what you're commenting on, and it's interesting because when you're reading something, your brain is processing things through the verbal part of your mind. When you're watching video, it's processing a lot of it through the emotional part and such. And those that shapes how we react to different things.
Sure.
So writing about it, you're sort of addressing a different part of your mind. You provide more context. There's more, maybe more permanence to it, mm-hmm. because people are more likely to cut out something in print or cut and paste and such like that. They do swap video segments, but, you know, you have to sit through the entire video thing rather than just sort of looking at something at a glance and reading from that.
Yeah. Yeah. So before we take a break, I wanted to ask you one last question. Have there been any stories that have really stuck with you throughout your career?
Other than the vampire, July the 4th one.
Scarred for life. I can't think of any one story because so much, sort of another version I get of that is, who are all the famous people you've met over 30-something years?
And that was going to be our next question.
Yeah, right. And that's always a difficult question for me because what people may not realize, so much of my work is in advance. I'm telling people, here's this concert coming to town. Here's what you can expect. Here's the person who's leading it. Here's a play coming to town. Here's just a movie, that sort of thing. So all of that is done in advance, which means you have to talk with people over the phone. You don't do face-to-face very much,
sure.
and such like that. So I've talked to a lot of famous people, which sounds impressive, but you have to think about their side of things. So like I'm getting a phone interview with someone saying Texas country music. And for me, it's like, oh, big name, you know, I've got 20 minutes to talk with this person. Wonderful. Well, on their side, I am slot number 5.
Sure.
And, you know, they have already done 4 20-minute interviews, and they get the same questions and the same sort of thing. And so the thing that they're sharing with me is not going to be very personal. Mm-hmm. It's going to be what they need to share to advance and, you know, get the crowd out to their show or promote a new album or something like that. My bias in a lot of these things, I tend to shy away from the celebrity part of things, like, oh, how's your wife doing, you know, and have you, blah, blah, blah. I'd look for more of the creative thing. How do you put a song together? When you're up and performing before a crowd, how do you get them into what you were doing? What do you like to share and such? And I find a lot of times the person at the other end is like, they haven't asked me that question before. These are good questions. I like that. I enjoy that.
Yeah.
So I'm sure there's some readers like, oh, it's all boring stuff. He keeps asking, how do you put these things together? But to me, that's part of the creative part of arts.
Sure. Thank you, Carl. Let's take a break and hear from a wonderful new segment called David in Art with David Smith.
One of the most misunderstood words floating around in the art world is probably modern. Lots of people think it's interchangeable with contemporary. And in some fields not pertaining to art, that might be accurate. But in terms of art, it means something very precise and doesn't mean contemporary at all, at least not today. In art, the word modern describes something that reflects the attitudes and assumptions of modernism, an intellectual movement that emerged in Europe around the 1880s. It was a way of looking at the world, and it was an intense reaction against the dominant mindset of the day, which was called Victorian. Part of the Victorian way of seeing the world was through the lens of history, on which the Victorian mind put a high premium. They loved history and believed that to know something thoroughly, you first had to understand the deep historical context of it. Their history books and even more, their biographies that they were crazy about ran to many volumes. This influenced their art as well. In Victorian literature and art, writes cultural historian Norman Cantor, the conscious concern was with telling a story. Narrative is paramount over other considerations. Well, what that basically means is that a viewer could look at a painting and easily understand what was happening in it by making up a little story about it. The meaning of the work of art was right there on the surface for all to see. But as industrialization and urbanization started changing society, some people began looking for new ways to think about life apart from the rigid structures of Victorianism. One thing they tossed overboard, along with rigid ethical standards, was the conviction that history somehow had a legitimate claim on the present, that we needed yesterday to make sense of things today. For modernists, history was useless except as something to rebel against. So the reason that modern art looks like it doesn't even try to tell a story is because it doesn't. Some of the artists of the 1890s, especially a group living and working in Vienna, were called secessionists, a good description of their attitude toward the status quo. One of their slogans was, "To the time, it's art, and to art, it's freedom." That freedom was construed as, more than anything else, a freedom from the past, from tradition, from style, from customs, ultimately from history itself. The attitude was embodied in modernist poet Ezra Pound's heartfelt cry to his fellow artists to make it new. Since the decline of modernism in the middle of the 20th century, modern art declined too. That's why we hear the term postmodern so much today. It doesn't mean post-contemporary, it means after modernism. Once people begin to look at it that way, they may not like the art that the modernists created any more than they do, but at least they can begin to understand why it looks like it does.
This is Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU-FM, and I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. We're continuing our chat with Waco Tribune-Herald entertainment editor Carl Hoover and Creative Waco executive director Fiona Bond. Going forward, I want to talk about how you guys have seen the creative life of Waco change. You both bring something different to the table. Carl, you've been observing Waco as a journalist for more than 30 years, while Fiona's really been working here in the arts for far less time than that. But you guys both play an important role in the creative development of Waco. So there are some people who perceive Waco's current creative identity as having come about very suddenly. As somebody who's been watching it for a while, Carl, do you think that that's an accurate way of viewing things?
No. I've seen it's more in waves. So I've seen times that there's been this buildup of things happening and organizations starting and venues opening that it's building, it looks good, and it's like it never reaches the tipping point. Something will happen. There'll be an economic downturn, or a venue will close, or something, and then you just sort of lose the steam and such like that. So we're at one of those rising waves, I think.
Sure.
One of the things I'm finding a little different, there is much more of I'm hearing more entrepreneurial spirit. I'm seeing more young people in their 20s and 30s staying in Waco, mm-hmm. where it used to be, you know, I need to make a career for myself and I need to go to the big city. Now you see more of, I think I can do it here. I'd like to start here and such. People are living downtown. I think that's been a shift in what we have done. What Fixer Upper and the Gaines have done with the silos and such, that's been a huge part of bringing people to town. But preceding them, you had McLean Stadium being built. And there was a lot of talk of, if we build this big thing here, we'll draw people in. And if we draw people in, what do we need to do? So the Gaines sort of benefited by a lot of the talk had been done in advance. And you started to see people invest more in downtown. And so they have sort of picked up on that. Some things I think are still out. How will things look a year from now, 2 years from now, 3 years from now? That might be a better sense of where we are as far as arts. For me, one of the big things, and I have tried to do this in my coverage, And sometimes I feel, I failed because here I am describing a lot of stuff. Here is how diverse we are in Waco. Here are the different things we have. We can go and we can attend, we can create. And yet so many organizations are scrapping for audience. And so building an audience to support all these things, I think, is crucial. And I hope to think that some of my coverage has been just making people aware so that they can support whatever they want to support.
Sure.
One of the things that I think is slowly changing, for much of my coverage, I felt that Waco has been an arts archipelago, lots of different islands. So the people who had, say, theater, just keeping theater afloat, their own little island afloat, kept them so busy they didn't have any time to speak for the arts in general or connect with, say, the symphony or such like that. There was that talk going on, but by and large, everybody was on their own little island. Mm-hmm. I think things like Arts Alliance, the cultural district, I think is a big part of giving a bigger picture. There are lots of different things we can connect, we can coordinate if we need to. We can, if we build a general support of the arts in Waco, it helps a lot of people rather than building support for like one particular art and such.
Definitely.
That's so true. I think building community is such a big part of trying to build that kind of overall impetus for the arts. I have to pay tribute here to Carl because I've actually never lived in a community that had such robust coverage of arts and culture mm-hmm. before. And that is a huge part of growing an audience. I do remember that when I first arrived in Waco, people would tell me you can't have more than one thing on at the same time, you know, on the same night. And now we regularly see several different events going on, which will all have full houses, partly because of the coverage that they've got. And, you know, that growth, you know, we've got a larger population in Waco, but I think more of those people are also looking to Waco for their arts and entertainment experiences, yeah. which is very encouraging to see.
Definitely. So, Carl, during the time that you've worked here covering the arts, are there any artists or, you know, whether that's individuals or arts organizations that you've seen mature over the years as you've been covering them?
I have seen I've seen some shifts in things.
Sure.
It seems like some of the theater programs are more likely to not necessarily push the envelope, but do things that may not have a broad, familiar base. And that's one of the things I wish there was more audience development from, because I think there is art that's being done that's new and fresh and going into different places we haven't gone before.
Sure.
But by and large, a lot of Waco audiences, it's the familiar. Mm-hmm. And this has been and it's not just Waco, trying to get people open to try something new and different, that sometimes is a hard sell. So you get something like a very familiar Broadway music from the 50s, people will come out to see that, or a part of your audience will come out to see that. Something new that was written, say, 4 years ago, that's maybe a little envelope pushing, I don't know about it. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to try that and such. And so that's one of the challenges, I think. And I think one of the things that younger audiences will bring is more they're interested in something new and different. They're willing to try it and such. And so sort of the challenge is to capture that openness to something new and expand it to things that we don't do a lot in Waco or parts of Waco we may not know about or see and such. That's the challenge. You were talking about shifts and change. That's one. One of the things, just sort of the concert scene that tends to come and go. We don't have the big concerts we used to, but I don't know cities our size have that. There may be something that's shifting to more smaller concerts, smaller venues. And that's a challenge for a lot of the live music venues and the bands in town is getting people to come out physically to their show, because so much of what we do in music seems to be online or streaming mm-hmm. or what you can listen to, through headphones or, you know, earpods or whatever, that sort of thing, and getting people out of that comfortable, doing it in my house, doing it in my apartment, to do it with other people live.
So in recent years, Waco, as you said, you know, or as we've talked about, there are some, like, you know, newer art forms that are coming to town. We've also had performances from some pretty big names in the arts across the board. We've had cellist Yo-Yo Ma, opera singer Renee Fleming, and we have some more events coming up this fall that will have some pretty significant names attached to them. Why do you guys think that we're seeing an increase in these kinds of performances? What is it about Waco right now that's kind of creating a space for those people to come here?
The skeptical journalist in me says money.
Sure.
Because we've always had famous people come to Waco and such. And it's just a matter of, you know, who is going to bring the money to bring them to town and such. Now, you know, connected with your question is there are more people who are saying, you know, Waco deserves this. We don't need to drive up to Dallas and Austin to see this. We can do this here and such like that. And so I think that may be sort of the changing. As you bring in people into your community, that changes the mindset about what Waco is, and that's an exciting thing. The issue will be, can we sustain it? Can we do this so that we have somebody, some celebrity famous, you know, every year instead of every two or three or four and such like that?
I think part of the answer to that also has to be reputation. I think Waco's reputation is changing.
Sure.
I know that when we put out the call for artists to participate in the Sculpture Zoo project, by the Brazos River, I was constantly having conversations with artists who really wanted their name to be associated with this rising Waco. And these are artists from all over the country, and actually two from outside the country.
Yeah.
And I really feel that even some artists within Waco who have traditionally done work outside Waco and not necessarily linked their name with where they came from in terms of their artistic product, whether that be singers, musicians, playwrights and poets, I can think of people in all those fields, theater, people who would live in Waco, but most of their product would be seen or viewed outside Waco, visual artists. I think we're seeing more of them actually link their names and their reputation and their product with Waco. And I'm very excited by that, because I know in the wider arts world, having people who are willing to actually link their name with your community is a really good barometer for seeing a place on the cultural rise. And so I'm really encouraged by that. And we've got the first exhibition, for example, featuring work by the world famous street artist Banksy coming up in September. That I don't think would have been something associated with Waco a couple of years ago. That requires, all kinds of people have to say, yes, that's a good idea, before they agree to something like that happening.
Thank you guys so much for sharing the way that you guys have perceived the development of Waco's creative identity. I've had a wonderful time with you guys today. This episode will be posted on kwbu.org. You can also visit creativewaco.org/blog for a recap of my chat with Fiona and Carl. Catch the next episode of Conversations with Creative Waco on Friday, August 24th at 11:30 a.m. and 8 p.m. This has been Conversations with Creative Waco on KWBU FM. I'm your host, Ray Jefferson. Thanks for tuning in.